Set your course for the Hoth system. General Veers, prepare your men.
All troops will debark for ground assault. Prepare to target the main generator.
Echo Station 3TA.
On an Imperial Walker.
Attack pattern Delta. Go now. Watch that clock fire, boys. Right now, I feel like I could take on the whole Empire myself.
Target, maximum firepower.
Imperial troops have entered the bay. Imperial troops have entered.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Echo Base. This is episode number 133. We're recording this on February 19th, 2018. It feels like spring at Echo Base. I don't know about you guys, but I'm looking for 70 degrees here in the next couple days, which is highly unusual for the northern part of Echo Base.
I got to go shave the tauntauns, so we got to make this quick. They're getting overheated. It's crazy.
Oh, I thought that was something different. Okay, never mind. I'm sorry. Shave the tauntauns. Wow.
Lou, really?
I'm sorry.
That's where you went with that.
No, it wasn't. I didn't. You missed your imagination. Wow. So, Tim, how are you? We hear your lovely voice.
I'm doing well.
Besides
Lou.
Shaving tauntauns, how are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. It's the first night of Rebels being back. That we are. The only thing same between us and Rebels is this podcast. So we're gonna whip right through this stuff,
folks.
Tonight, right?
This is the measure of dedication that we have for you here, because Rebels is on right now, and none of us are watching it because we are here doing stuff for you.
That's right.
That's it. There's a lot of dead air.
I'm sorry, Eric was going to jump in, but he just...
No, hold on, let me pause Rebels here, hold on. Okay, what were you guys saying?
I swear, gosh, Eric, I will disconnect you in a hurry.
No, I mean, it's good, it's a good episode, you guys should totally check it out.
I'm not even going to ask how Eric's doing.
Nope, not going to talk to him tonight.
Wait, no, we have to talk to him, because if we don't talk to him, he'll just watch Rebels without us and just...
So
we sitting there not even talking. So hey,
he'll actually enjoy it more.
So Eric, how are you this evening?
I'm doing wonderfully. How are you?
I already answered that, but I'm doing well.
I
know.
I just felt like it was the polite thing to say. Obviously, you guys are upset about not watching Rebels, which I want to point out again is a great episode.
Jesus.
I'm having a hard time hearing it, so I put the closed captioning on so I can at least read the dialogue while you guys are, yammering on about, whatever. It's Rebels. Whatever. It's the premiere. We should be watching it. Everybody out there is listening right now, seen it.
Before we recorded, didn't Eric say something like, who cares about Rebels? Didn't he say that? No? Yes?
Here's the thing. I actually believe that he's watching it because he keeps looking at another screen.
He is.
And I feel like he's cheating on us. That's it. I truly do. That's kind of where I'm at in this relationship. And I have a measure of jealousy and I'm not proud of that, but
that's it.
Damn it, Eric, you're cheating on us.
Yeah. Well, you know,
no. Okay. I'm back. I'm over my tantrum. Well, let's just get right into the news then so we can get to Rebels pretty soon.
Let's do that. What do we have
in the news here, Tim? We have Han Solo. They had this set up before they sold to Disney? No.
To an extent. Apparently, the news here is that Kasdan was hired to put together a Han Solo film before the sale by Lucasfilm, happened in 2012.
But now, before the sale happened, my understanding was there was nothing in the pipeline.
We all had a failed understanding.
Evidently, now, hold on. Here's what was stated back then, is that Lucas provided an outline, not even a full treatment, I don't think, but an outline for a new trilogy and some other side projects for Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay, I remember
it doesn't mean it was
trilogy.
In the pipeline per se, but it means that the indication at least is that George Lucas had given them something on a standalone Han Solo film idea.
Yep.
Okay.
So they have
that makes
the
more
seed.
Sense to me. Yeah.
Yeah, they had the seed, and then as it says here, and we're getting this from LRM Online. I've never even heard of this.
Latino Review. They changed their name to Latino Review Media. They're a solid source.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that's
really?
Yeah,
good stuff. I didn't know it changed.
I didn't recognize. Okay.
They're the ones that Eric Geller got into the big fight with online.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Back on the Forcecast, and we were all like, dude. Yeah, probably not the best route to handle this, but yeah, no, they're good, solid sources on stuff.
So they say here the project was put on hold once the sale happened. The project was put on hold for Kazan to write The Force Awakens, but obviously this has come back around, and Kazan did in fact write Solo with his son John. So okay. He was able to pretty much pick things up where he left off. To whatever extent that was.
Cool. Well, we will know soon enough how that turns out.
Yeah.
Pretty soon.
You see, we're all really excited about this. Speaking of things we are excited about, we are getting the digital download available mid-March.
That's early.
A couple weeks before the physical discs are available, I guess. Which I'm always torn because I want to get the digital download right away because I want to see it. Mm-hmm. But I want to buy the disc too.
This is actually what they're hoping for because they want people to spend the money yeah. twice. Truly,
right.
And I did that with The Force Awakens. I spent the money twice. Mm-hmm. I was one of those idiots. Not that I'm calling anyone else an idiot, but you're spending the money twice.
I mean, look at how many times have we all purchased any of the Star Wars movies? I mean,
true.
I mean, yeah. I've given away copies of VHS and so forth to friends and DVD sets that I don't need anymore because I have the newer Blu-ray. It's like,
yep.
It's just frustrating. It is frustrating. Now, is there anything?
I stopped. I used to do that. I held out for the physical version, and then when they started doing the early digital release, I did pick up the early digital release for The Force Awakens. Then picked up the Steelbox. And Rogue One, I didn't do that. I bought the digital version. I don't have a physical version of Rogue One. And I've started doing that now. I think just because of space issues. And I'm kind of ethically against it because if iTunes ever does anything to change their terms of service or... there was a big debacle a while back because Amazon was selling a Kindle book. I think it might have been 1984 by George Orwell. And for some reason... there was some little rights snafu that they had. And so they yanked it off of everybody's Kindle. And people are like, no, really? Wait a minute. I bought this book. I own this book. And Amazon was like, not so much. Read the fine print. You bought a license to read the book.
Right.
And when you buy digital copies through iTunes and stuff, you're basically buying a DRM'd copy mm-hmm. of something that you have a license to watch. You don't
and there's
actually
also another...
own it. So I don't like that, but the convenience is hard to turn down.
Oh, it's wicked convenient. But there's also the question of, what happens when you pass and you want to give your collection of media to your children and you can't because it's not really yours. It's a license. And, there's been those issues too. I don't think that's ever been resolved, has it? Has there been any kind of movement on that? Because
I'm sure that in legal circles that there is some clarification that has been provided on the transfer of ownership of digital things to some extent, but
I'm sure there are
terms of service that override some of that that change on a company by company basis too. So we're still in that transition period where the law doesn't know how to keep up with the technology.
But it makes it hard to
turn down when it comes out 2 weeks early, though.
It is.
That's the problem.
Yeah, there may be some sort of terms of service where it doesn't allow transferability or anything like that. So,
And the problem is I'll probably buy it digitally and then life will get in the way and I won't be able to watch it until 2 weeks later when I could have bought the disc and had it anyway.
There you go.
Which is frustrating. Yeah. But, and for the last two movies, I did not buy a physical copy. I was going to, and I just didn't do it. But in hindsight, I'm like, well, I really want to have that in case something changes and iTunes goes defunct or changes in terms of service, like Eric said, and you've got no way to view it now. I want to have that disc I can just put into a physical player and have it on my TV.
Even though I don't want it in a physical player. The hard part is now, too, that iTunes especially, they give you a 4K HDR copy of it now, too.
Mm. I don't have a 4K TV yet, but yeah, they do.
I've got 4K, but it doesn't do HDR. No, it's HDR that it doesn't do.
Yeah.
So, you know, but still, you're future-proofing yourself for when you do get a 4K HDR TV.
Yeah.
You'll already have it, and you won't have to pay. Plus, it's cheaper.
You won't have to buy it again.
4K versions, the physical copies are $25 minimum. A lot of them, they're $30,
$35. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So.
Now, I haven't actually looked into this much yet. Do we have a listing of what extras are on the
I don't think so.
Whether
I've seen nothing about
physical copy or.
And apparently these dates are even a leak. I don't think that it's been officially acknowledged by Lucasfilm that these are the release dates.
Right.
Okay.
Nor has iTunes posted a release date on their pre-order page.
Yeah.
Right.
So there's nothing out yet for what's going to be on the discs. And we're looking, we're a little more than a month away. If the Blu-ray is slated to come out March 27th. So hopefully we're going to see some marketing pretty soon.
Because the article that we linked to here from Screen Rant says that StarWarsNews.net has a release date of March 14th in New Zealand iTunes.
Okay.
But no release date for US.
And of course, you know, whatever they put out, I hate to be negative about it, but it's going to frustrate me because it's going to be what they've done with the last few movies, mm-hmm. that there's a Target exclusive and there's a Best Buy exclusive and there's a Walmart exclusive and they all have slightly different things. And that's just, to me, that's frustrating and it's silly.
Yeah, it is.
It's
a disservice to the fans,
especially this year, because normally when they do this, if it's extra content, it's normally stupid extra content. Like it's uselessly like, did you like working on the movie? Oh, I love working on the movie. It was the most awesome time of my life and blah, blah, blah. I mean, obviously you liked working on the freaking movie. Okay. Yep. Duh. This time around though, Tim, I can tell you definitely want to pick up the Target exclusive. The bonus content on this version is actually good bonus content. It's useful. You especially will love it.
I don't even like you. I don't know. I know where you're going
with this.
It's good
stuff. It's a whole thing on the Porgs.
Yeah.
And the creation of the Porgs.
Is it a recipe book?
It is not a recipe book. But the more you learn about the Porg culture, maybe the better you'll understand when you go to cook them. See?
Yes.
Yeah. It's always good to understand their customs before you drop them in a deep fryer.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
So in related news, The Last Jedi novelization we know is coming out March 6th. That has been an official date for quite a while. But just kind of reiterating that to align that with the expected releases for the film.
I really want to know why it took them so long to get this novelization out.
Yeah. You know, the film release and everything else. But the book, I know that it was probably because they wanted to avoid spoilers and stuff, but.
So release it the week after.
Right. This is really, really, really obnoxious.
Yeah.
I don't know. March 6th. I mean, come on. Who releases the novelization for a book or the novelization for a movie that is a tentpole film like this right around the time it's hitting home theater? Unprecedentedly.
Almost 3 full months after.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
That's really crazy.
Yeah. This is a first. I've never seen this before.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully we can have Jason Fry in the show at some point and talked about that process and see if he has any insight to it. But
yeah. Well, and for us, it would have been nice to have the novel, because if there are things we want to go back and reference from the movie and we can't yet, and we don't want to get pirated copies of the movie, we could at least go back to the novelization and look them up.
Sure.
Like we have in the past, but it's not happening now. Now, are we still looking at, is it March 14th for the digital release still? And then the 27th for the Blu-ray?
Well, the 27th is Blu-ray. The 14th date is still up in the air. It hasn't been announced, right?
Well, it hasn't been confirmed, but I mean, the consensus is still the 14th, right?
Yeah, usually about 2 weeks. Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Makes sense.
Yeah, no, this is annoying with the novelization. That's just nonsense.
So in other news of getting some stuff from The Last Jedi, some kind of additional content stuff tomorrow. So by the time folks hear this, it will have already played.
You've already missed it.
But we're hoping that I'm assuming they'll be able to get it somewhere, like from ABC News.
Yes, it is available
online or an app or something. So ABC News is doing a documentary called The Force of Sound, providing a look at the sound design of The Last Jedi. And I mean, if you guys are like me, I really eat up these documentaries that they do, even though some of it is, you know, like when it, for this one in particular, when it comes to sound, hey, there's sound design stuff that they did in A New Hope that they're still using now. And I'm fine with that. And that's cool because I think that's that shows how good what they did then was and that it still holds up now. But then there's also some really cool, great, innovative things that they're doing now and new tech and all that stuff. So I love these documentaries and I'm really looking forward to seeing it. That goes live again tomorrow morning, Tuesday, the 20th. And right now, the source for that is abcnews.com/features.
Well, hold up. So I put this in the show notes, so this is my bad, not Tim's. But the source for it's actually starwars.com. abcnews.com/features is where you can go to stream the documentary.
Yep.
It's a full 30-minute documentary. It will be made available 4 a.m. Eastern time on Tuesday morning. I will not have the show edited by then. So if you're hearing the show, it's already streaming. There will be a shortened version of it that will air on ABC's Nightline show. But the entire documentary is available right now on streaming. abcnews.com/features.
Excellent.
Awesome. Awesome. I will have to check that out. I'm not going to get up at 4 a.m. because I'll be up until probably 1 watching Rebels. But anyways, so Martin Freeman's looking to get into Star Wars, right? I mean, who wouldn't? But
it would be nice for him to be able to break into like some sort of a major film franchise somehow.
I know.
Someday.
The poor guy's never been anything big.
Yeah. I know, right?
I really mean, do.
What has he done?
Not much. The whole Marvel Cinematic Universe and like the Lord of the Rings series. So like two of the biggest franchises to hit theaters. But other than that, like practically nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
It's so sad. Those two roles. That's it. But
yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Maybe if he gets into Star Wars, it'd be a break in his career and he can go on to bigger and better things.
Could be.
We can hope.
So if you're in Hollywood and you've got these kind of credentials, do you just go, yeah, I'd like in. Did they didn't write a script for you and slot you in somewhere?
What you have to do is you have to go to change.org and you have to start a petition.
I really want to be in Star Wars.
Yeah.
He apparently did express some interest a few years back, and they did turn him down at the time, saying that there were some other actors that they had a preference for some of the potential roles that he could have played. But he's definitely still interested, and hey, he's a great actor, and hopefully, you know, they can find room for him and pull him in somewhere.
See, I don't think that this is how Lucasfilm works with this. If you look at the cameos that happened in The Force Awakens, those were cameos. Those were people that J.J. Abrams knows. Not Kathleen Kennedy, not Lucasfilm. J.J. brought in people that he knew. Like, Matt, what's his name? He was in Lost. He was an Alias. Last name begins, I think, with a G. Anyway, he's been in like everything Abrams has ever done. He brought in Scotty from Star Trek.
Right.
Simon Pegg. You know, he brought in people he's worked with before. Rian Johnson brought in people he's worked with before.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you kind of have to know the director to be brought in for some sort of like little side thing. And then if you want a major role, you have to have a director probably pushing to get you a bigger role in there.
But doesn't everybody know everybody in Hollywood? Don't they all know each other?
Yes,
right? No?
But they don't care necessarily. There's a difference, Lou.
That's true.
I mean, Samuel Jackson had to kind of beg and plead with George Lucas apparently to get a role, and George said, yeah, sure, why not? But again, George was the one actually hands-on with the film. I don't think you can just go to Kathleen Kennedy and say, hey, I want to roll in this. She's going to say, no, I don't think so. We kind of have a process that, you know, we're looking at some other people right now. I don't see this working unless he knows somebody. If he knows Benioff and Weiss, maybe. If he knows Abrams, which I'm guessing he probably doesn't, or he might have been in episode 7.
I'm confident that if they have a good role that is suitable to him, to his acting style, to his general age and appearance and that kind of stuff, I'm sure that they'll be able to place him. I mean, they've really brought in some interesting actors. And we're talking beyond the cameo. And I'm sure he's probably pushing for something beyond the cameo. I don't think he wants to be, you know, Stormtrooper number 4. I'm sure he wants to have his face shown and actually have some kind of a role, even if it's not a major role, but something that at least has a few lines to it. And
that kind of bugs me, though, because Laura Dern, I guess it's been long enough since I've seen her in something, and she's never really had a character that character has really become like a pop culture icon. Even her character from Jurassic Park wasn't really quite that. So it's a little bit different for me with her, but even that kind of felt like, oh, it's Laura Dern. It's Princess Leia. It's Poe Dameron. It's Laura Dern. Mm-hmm. The Jedi Council in A New Hope. You've got Ki-Adi Mundi. You've got Yoda. You've got, you know, Kit Fisto, blah, blah, blah. And Samuel Jackson. Mm-hmm. Not Mace Windu. Samuel Jackson. I mean, he became Mace Windu by the time episode 3 rolled around. He kind of started, this is maybe a Mace Windu-y sort of person. It's distracting in a world that is supposed to be way out there a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away to have people that you know from other work. And I think that's why it was brilliant to have someone like Simon Pegg be in a costume.
True.
Even Gwendolyn Christie, we wanted to see her with the helmet off, but I think that having the helmet on, and I mean, she's also pretty new. Yeah, we know her from Game of Thrones, but she's also a relatively new actress. Martin Freeman has been around for a long time, is well-respected. He's a good actor, but you know who he is, and it just kind of feels like it'd be a distraction. I don't want them to cast people like that.
Exactly. When you see somebody you know from other stuff, it does take you out of the moment. Even for a second, it's like, oh, it's kind of jarring.
Right. What was the name of Arnold Schwarzenegger's character from Commando? What was the name of Arnold Schwarzenegger's character from Predator? What was the name of Arnold Schwarzenegger's character from The Running Man? You don't know. It's Arnold. Okay. Yeah. So I don't want Martin Freeman in my Star Wars. All due respect to him because I like him. I like him. I like his work.
Yeah, and he's not so well known that it's like, wow, but he's one of those guys that shows up in a lot of stuff, and you're like,
right.
Yeah, okay, I remember him from Sherlock. I remember him from, you know.
Right.
Yeah, and it's like,
he's now been in too much that we can't not see him as him.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that point of view, but there are certain actors. I mean, he is not. The nice thing to me about Martin Freeman is that he is not I don't know if this makes sense. He's not an aggressive actor. He doesn't like, his presence doesn't compete for screen time. Right. And so like even seeing him in Black Panther, his role in Black Panther is very prominent, but you're bought into the character.
Of him as that guy from Sherlock.
Do you? You know, okay.
In my mind, yeah, it does.
Yeah, and he's Watson.
Yep.
He's what's his face from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Although here's one I didn't know. He was in 2009 HIV the musical.
Who knew?
You didn't know that?
Mic drop. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm just looking. Have you seen HIV the musical 2, the college years?
Oh gosh. So I don't know. I mean it didn't pull me out of it with him. I mean, certainly for some actors, I think it does, but he really gets into the character and he's a little bit more of a subtle actor. I mean, I'm fine with him being in a Star Wars film, but I do understand what you guys are saying about it. I get it. But speaking of people who are in Star Wars films, John Favreau.
Yeah, he's getting a voice job, right?
Yes. He has, in fact, confirmed which character in Solo that he is voicing. And it is, if you remember back to the teaser, it was the guy with four arms who he's actually voicing. Of course, we don't know how big of a part this character has. But I like anything that John Favreau touches. I think he's not an incredibly outstanding actor, but I like his stuff a lot. I think he's funny. I think he has a good presence. He does lines very well, especially things that require a certain timing, be it a comedic timing or otherwise. I just think the guy does really well. I think he's a great actor. So,
He's a good director, cool too.
To have him. Yes, and he's a great director.
Because he's done so many things beyond just acting, I think it makes his presence when he acts even better, you know?
And he's also very unassuming. He's not the kind of person who you feel when you're looking at the screen is competing for screen time. Of course, in this situation, he's voicing a character, so that's kind of irrelevant. But yeah, I just generally like anything that John Favreau's in. So I think it's cool that he's going to be in this.
Yeah, as a counterpoint to the whole Martin Freeman thing, as much as I see him in a movie and recognize him right away, he doesn't take me out as much as Martin Freeman would.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, I don't know why. Maybe Martin Freeman stands out more than John does, and John's more of a blend into the background kind of guy, but he's there when you need him. You know, he's funny, he's good.
Again, I think Martin Freeman is also, like you just described, Tim, not someone whose presence is overwhelming when he walks on. Look at someone like Judi Dench.
Oh, yeah.
If I were in a big room with 100 people and I were looking out the window, if Judi Dench walked in the room from the opposite side of the room, I would know something is up and I need to turn around. And, obviously, because Judi Dench just walked in.
You would damn well better know it. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So he doesn't have that type of presence where it's overwhelming when he gets on screen, much like Jon Favreau. But the roles he's played... Again, he's played the lead from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy based on one of the most classic sci-fi books of all time. He's played one of the two leads in Sherlock, which is Dr. Watson, which is one of the most iconic classical literature characters of all time. Mm-hmm. He has played a character in the MCU, but honestly, I couldn't tell you his name, so that one doesn't even bother me. He's played, was it Bilbo Baggins?
Yes.
In The Hobbit? So, again, one of the most iconic fantasy characters of all time. He's playing these major roles that are icons from the source material, and it hasn't propelled him to stardom per se, but
I'm sure
barely crossed that threshold of like now he's a little bit distracting. But if he were doing a voice for a character, that's a whole different thing.
Sure.
Yeah.
So and so Jon Favreau doing a voice of a character, I think is brilliant. This is the way you bring in celebrities into Star Wars. If you want to have them be involved or if they want to be involved and kind of have it be fun, you either slap a stormtrooper helmet on Daniel Craig or you throw an alien costume on Simon Pegg, or you let Jon Favreau do a voice of an alien.
And if it's somebody you don't really want in the movie, tell them, okay, we got a character, but it's going to require 18 hours of makeup.
Yeah,
and they'll probably say no. So there you go.
Or you just cut them like they did for the royals in Britain.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Poor guys.
Let's talk some books now because we got some book news this week. Quite a bit of book news. I was surprised at. So the first one that caught my attention, and this one I like the way they're doing this. I think at least. I mean, I haven't read it obviously, but The Last Shot by Daniel Jose Older. He's got this movie done in three parts. Sorry, this book done in three parts. One takes place, before A New Hope, I think it was?
Before Solo.
Okay, I'm trying to read through it because I remember briefly what it was before. I thought it was one after Jedi.
I thought it said three parts too when I read it, but then I'm looking at the description they gave, it only listed two different time period. So
I know the one I originally read, I can't remember where I saw that, was it was definitely three parts. It was one I thought that was pre-Solo, one that was between A New Hope and Empire, and then one that was post-Jedi, I thought.
Okay, well, the article, the information from Entertainment Weekly, which is the most proximal source I have for any of this, is, I've got a quote here. Part of it takes place before the events of Solo and focuses on Lando and L3-37. Part of it takes place between Solo and A New Hope, and that focuses on Han and Chewie, and that's where we get Santa Staros for the first time. Now, if you don't remember, she's the one who appeared in the comic book and claimed to be married to Han. But that's only two periods. So what you just said, Lou, maybe a portion of it taking place between A New Hope and Empire, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, but okay. I don't know anything about after Return of the Jedi. Again, they mentioned three periods. This quote only lists two, so...
And I can tell you what happened with Han between Empire and Jedi. A whole lot of nothing.
I heard he was really cold.
A whole lot of nothing.
Yeah. Let's see. There was an article here. Why don't you guys listen to this? I'm trying to see a little more about this.
All right. I like this. I like the fact that it's about, you know, there was a Falcon book before and I never read it. And I kind of wish I had now, but I like the fact that they're kind of covering the ship and having different time periods, like, you know, Lando and his droid, and then later on Han and Chewie. And I'm assuming that there's going to be some way in which the overall narrative ties together in some way.
Yeah, I would assume things would link together where they'll show, you know, some significant thread between story A and story B. It's great, actually, Eric, that you mentioned the Millennium Falcon book, which I thought was a pretty good book. I did read it. I have it. I don't particularly remember everything that was in it, but it was kind of that history of the Millennium Falcon, at least in what's now Legends. So it would be interesting to see what they might be taking from that storyline and applying to this. Actually, anywhere in this list of books that we're talking about here tonight.
Right. You know, looking at this list too, I don't recognize any of these authors. I know that they've done stuff. Okay. Mm. I recognize Pablo Hidalgo for Solo, The Official Guide. Yeah. Other than Pablo, I don't recognize any of these authors. And I like the idea of bringing in new talent. That being said, I was answering a piece of listener feedback on Aren't You a Little Short for a Podcast that I released over the weekend. And I was talking about the fact that there are some authors from Legends I wish we were seeing more of. I want to see Mike Stackpole again, for one. And there were some really good authors that we just don't see anymore. And yet, you know, the quality of the new canon novels generally are considered kind of a coin toss.
Yeah,
really good stuff, you know, with some kind of crappy stuff too.
And yet there was a panel that we saw, I forget if it was New York Comic Con or Celebration, where there was, I think it was New York Comic Con, a boatload of authors lined up all doing stuff. And I'm like, okay. And people that we've all known and heard of, I can't remember who was in the panel at the time now, but, you know, so we got the announcement for the Thrawn follow-up.
Yeah. And I'm glad they brought Zahn back, but I'd like to see James Luceno.
Yeah.
Love to see Mike Stackpole. Troy Denning, I never really had a big following for him. I want to mention Aaron Alston. Unfortunately, he passed on, but I like to always mention him when I have an opportunity because he was a brilliant author and I loved his work. But I think that there were some authors we had before that it'd be nice to see again. So.
Yeah. I mean, we obviously have Timothy Zahn, who has done the old and the new. We have Christy Golden, who's also done some old and new. And so it is nice to see those returning authors. It is nice to see some new ones. Mike Stackpole and Luceno are two of my absolute favorites from the EU. And I just would love to see them return to the Star Wars galaxy and do some more stuff, even if it's with completely different characters. I mean, a big part of the reason why I like those writers is because of the particular storylines that they did and the characters that they wrote and such. But even if they had to go with a different slate, I would love to see them return because I just I really like their style of writing. I mean, Lucino's style of writing is, to me, unparalleled. How he gets into characters. Just, it's incredible how he defines characters and really gets into their heads.
And that's the thing. Those two in particular, they each have this certain skill that nobody else seems to have. Lucino really gets into what you just said, into those characters and kind of the depth of you know, the politics and the environment going on with the characters. Stackpole could write battles like nobody else could. Oh, not even Zahn.
And it's amazing how Mike Stackpole could write an X-Wing dogfight, and you can picture in your head like the position of the ships and how they're moving around and stuff, which is
with no confusion,
incredibly challenging thing to do. I mean, it's one thing to do it if it's a ground battle where it's essentially two dimensions.
Right.
But then when you're, you know, in the air or in space, you're then dealing with three dimensions. And that's very, very different.
And not just three dimensions, but it's like a hockey game. No position in that battle is stationary.
Right.
It is nothing but constant movement all the time, period. But just by the definition of the physics of the environment. So, he just, in any author anywhere, he is an unparalleled skill. The only person that has, I can't really say that they've come close to it, because the type of space combat they've covered is a little bit different than what Stackpole does and different from the Star Wars environment. But there is one Star Wars author that doesn't often get talked about when we mention bringing people back, and I think it's an oversight, and we really need to maybe form a petition at change.org to get this Star Wars author brought back. What do you know who I'm thinking of?
No.
James S. A. Corey.
Ah, that's not one.
Ah, author. I see a loose smile in there.
Yeah, I was, when you were saying that, I was thinking, I think you know where he's going, because the space battle stuff they wrote in The Expanse is hands down some of the best space combat stuff
absolutely
I have ever read. You feel like you know what it feels like to fly in a ship under thrust and deal with the gravity and deal with the way that the combat's working out. It's just, I can't recommend their writing style highly enough.
And of course, they use real world physics, which is where I was going with, you know, it's different from Star Wars. Mm-hmm. But yeah, James S. A. Corey did a Han Solo novel just before the canon changed over. Like, it was one of the last non-canon books that came out.
Right.
It Honor Among Thieves?
I think it was Honor Among Thieves. Sounds right.
Yeah, it was basically a heist.
Yeah, and to this day, they remain the best voice I've ever heard for Han Solo. They get Han Solo in a way that a lot of other authors have tried, and authors have done really well with it, but like these guys really just, I say these guys because James S. A. Corey is a pseudonym for two authors that work together. But they really nailed the character of Han Solo and Chewbacca and did brilliantly. Their Expanse series, there's a TV series on the Sci-Fi Network that is phenomenal. If you're a Star Wars fan, you're probably going to love that series as well. They just released, what book are they on now, Lou?
I think it's book 7 or 8. Persepolis Rising is the latest one. Excellent book. I think this one kind of harkens back to the older style stuff. I wasn't real happy with the last two editions, but now this
most recent one,
it wraps up some stuff I was like, I didn't understand in the last two books. So it was good.
Yeah. I just finished it yesterday, but anyway, nice. I'd like to see James S. A. Corey come back to Star Wars too. But.
And the tough thing that you mentioned, Eric, is, you know, writing Chewie. And I think that, you know, writing Chewie is like writing an astromech, where they don't have a voice in English, or in any known language to us in real life here on Earth. So there's a challenge to how you write a character like that and how they communicate. I mean, you can constantly do translations for those characters, which to an extent you obviously have to do, but then you're also a little bit more ingrained in some of the body language and that kind of stuff. That goes on with characters like that. And that's a big challenge.
Yeah.
If I could back up for a minute here, talking about the last shot.
Yeah.
I didn't find the original article I read, but I did see an article on StarWars.com Gives a whole description of what's going on in the novel, but then the very end it says Star Wars The Last Shot takes place in three time periods, when Lando owned the Falcon, shortly after Han takes ownership of the Falcon, and not long after the Battle of Endor.
Okay.
So the third time period's after Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
Good. Yep. Okay. Good. Hey, anything that happens after Return of the Jedi, I'm happy to see, you know.
Well, hopefully starting to fill in some of those blanks we have to see what happened between then and Force Awakens.
Yeah. Right.
See, what do we not cover? Anything else? So we have a comic coming out.
Yeah, we haven't covered any of them other than
okay. So young adult novel by Ray Carson, focusing on Han and Kira. Okay. That I'm not sure. I'm sure I'll read it. Some of the young adult novels have been great, but
Thing. Normally I'd ignore it, but so far the young adult novels really have been good. Some of the best Star Wars novels in the new canon.
They really have. And if folks haven't picked them up, you really should consider it. I mean, I'll be honest with you, aside from, you know, a slightly larger print and a little more white space on a page, I don't notice much difference between, in most cases, between the young adult books and any of the other, you know, regular novels that are marketed out there. You might see a slightly different focus in maybe some relationship types of things or other stuff.
Yeah, that's the biggest change.
By and large, I mean, they read well. There's good pacing in them. There's good storytelling in them. There's good development in them. They're really not that much different.
And so they've given us more insight into the politics and, you know, the way things are laid out than other novels have. Yeah. I mean, Lost Stars, the very end of that, gave some great detail about what the state of the Union or state of the galaxy is.
Yeah. And the Leia novel,
appreciative.
And the Leia novel really also did the same thing for establishing, you know, we all thought we knew Leia, and this book gave her such a foundation in terms of what her upbringing was and the things that she went through. And then it introduced Haldo for us and established that character. And it just really very interesting, some incredible depth to it. So if you've been staying away from the young adult books because, well, you say, hey, I'm not a young adult, or you're afraid of getting sucked into some kind of Twilight
romance
thing.
Novel.
No offense, Carrie. No offense on, you know, my Twilight zing there. But I mean, really, check them out. At least pick up one and see if you like it.
Star Wars has always been so much about the characters that when you're talking about, you know, focus on relationships and things like that, that's some of the best stuff about Star Wars. Not necessarily romantic relationships, but just the relationships between various different characters. That's some of the best stuff about Star Wars. So I guess it kind of makes sense that the young adult novels would still be appealing even to people who are not into young adult novels.
Yeah.
So anyway, so Most Next. Wanted by Ray Carson.
Yeah.
That's what it was, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. See a Lando comic coming out, Double or Nothing. This opens up a 5-issue series the Wednesday after the movie opens, so it'll be kind of kind of fun. I like the limited series. I'm not invested in something I got to pick up another title for forever.
Yeah.
You know, did you guys I kind of like that there's an end to it.
Did you guys read the other Lando comic? The first one that came out maybe two years ago?
I've got a lot of catching up to do, but I did read that.
Yeah. It was so good. It was such a focus on particularly on the relationship between him and Lobot. And it had some interesting ties into the Empire. And what was it? They ended up trying to steal one of the Emperor's ships or something like that.
Really?
And,
I've always resisted Lando stuff because I never really found his character that exciting. I don't know why. He's never really caught on to me that, God, I got to know more about Lando.
I think that a lot of times they've portrayed him as, I hate to say shallow, and I'm not sure that's the right word.
Yeah, superficial was what I was thinking. So
stereotypical, as far as the hustler, suave ladies man, blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, it's another guy in a casino, and he plays a card game, and he wins something, and then he loses it, and he has to go on a little adventure to get it back. Like, I don't care. But Tim is right. This Lando comic that came out a couple of years ago, and it's collected now in graphic novel form. That's the other great thing about it is they collect them so often. If you miss this 5-part series that's coming out, 4 or 5 months later, you can probably pick up the graphic novel and get it. And Rodney Barnes, that name sounds familiar to me for some reason, and I'm not sure why. He's the guy who's writing it.
Okay.
He's done something else that I recognize, but if I'm recognizing him for the right reasons, he's a good writer.
Okay.
So
I'm hoping that the solo movie makes me more interested in Lando. I'm really hoping that Donald Glover's portrayal of him and the way they have him written in the book or in the movie are going to make me want to know more about Lando. So we'll see.
I got to like the character of Lando even more, I think, through that comic. And actually
I agree.
I got in the trade.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the end of it with Lobot, I mean, seriously, if you don't get watery eyed when you hit that part, it's because it's like freaking tragic. Really? Like you realize
made Lobot a character.
Yeah.
And okay. Lobot wasn't really before. And it made him his own character.
Yeah.
In a way that was really, it was compelling.
How do they write that in a comic? Well, I guess, he just looks and points and doesn't really.
No.
Is that how he is?
No.
Because that's not. No. No.
I know you're just making a joke, but dude, no. Like, just, listen, you can get it, I think, on the cheap now through the Kindle store on Amazon if you've got an iPad or if you're willing to just read it on your computer. But if you've got an iPad, pick it up. It's relatively cheap and it's a good series.
Yeah. Okay. It really, like I said,
I'm worried about overhyping it now. I mean, it's not God's gift to comic books.
It's like,
but that being said, it's a solid read.
Yeah. And I don't know for sure if it's the last page, but it's truly the last few panels of the interaction with Lando and Lobot. And you're floored.
It's good.
Like your heart just kind of stops. And it's like, this just sucks. So not the story, the circumstance. And you're like, horrible.
Right.
Horrible.
It's worth going out of your way to pick up.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll have to check it out sometime. Let's see. Now we have the Art of
Real
Solo.
Quick, did we mention, so we don't have a release date on most of these books. The understanding is that they are all being released by the time the movie shows up on the 25th, but the Lando comic book is coming out the Wednesday after the movie opens.
Okay.
Yep. Comic books always are released on Wednesdays. Movies, television, DVDs and stuff are always on Tuesdays. But the comic is coming out the Wednesday after the film.
Okay.
Okay. So a couple of books now that are more of a behind the scenes type thing, I'm assuming. So The Art of Solo. Will be out, and those are always good to pick up because you get tips and details that you don't see in the movie. Mm-hmm. And the one I'm looking forward to the most out of this listing here, I think, is the official guide from Hidalgo. I think it's going to give us all the details that we may or may not catch in the movie.
I always don't get those because they're always expensive, and I'm like, it's just a picture book and a little bit of trivia, and I can always get it on Wikipedia later. And then after the movie's out and people are talking about stuff, I'm like, wait a minute, where?
Right.
That's not true. What makes you think that that's
that? Yeah, exactly.
It's in the official book. What? Really? Yeah. That Phasma's armor came from Palpatine's cruiser from back in episode one. It's in the Last Jedi's official guidebook. Like, dang it. So I did finally pick up the one for The Last Jedi. I think Costco or Sam's had it 30% off or something. And they're good. They're really good books.
There's a lot of good detail in those things. But
yes,
it's funny because, and I've said before in a show, I don't really care about the Solo movie. But I want to get this book because I want to know all the details and I want to know about it. I mean, I don't think we need it, but if we're going to have it, I want to know as much about it as I can, I guess. It sounds kind of weird and I can't explain
myself.
You want
to be an expert on the things you don't care about.
I guess.
Of course. Makes perfect sense.
These last ones here are kids books, I guess. Right. And I see the cover of this on the StarWars.com article about all the books.
The
Mighty Chewbacca in the
Forest
of Fear.
Dude, that's a freaking striped Pikachu. Is that not Pikachu on his shoulder?
It is. It looks like it.
Does he not look angry?
No, he looks like he's smiling.
That is an angry looking Pikachu.
No, he's smiling. He's got two little fangs, but he's smiling.
I can't see you guys anywhere.
I don't know where K2SO is in this, but he's in there too, or somebody.
Yeah,
who looks
you
like
saw
K2SO.
That.
K2SO, yeah.
Yeah, K2SO's in here too.
Which is really
author
neat
of the Origami Yoda series.
It's really neat to see that tie-in, and it actually kind of makes you wonder. And I gotta say, I gotta throw some credit to John, because talking to John last week, we were talking about what links we might see from Solo, since Solo takes place before A New Hope, and while we know that Rogue One takes place before A New Hope, might we see some characters from Rogue One have some kind of an appearance in Solo? And actually the thing that he brought up was, well, hey, maybe we'll see, you know, K2SO and or Cassian.
Nice.
So it's kind of neat that this happens to come up for this book. So who knows?
That's cool. And that's a good call on John's part too. I mean, it's not the movie, but you know, spin-off book, close enough.
Yeah.
Oh boy. So let's see, Star Wars Adventures, free comic book day preview. Let's see.
Plus issues of 10 and 11. So Star Wars Adventures is a comic by IDW.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which is a very good, they're kind of the new Dark Horse comics. Which, it's probably an insult to both Dark Horse and IDW to say that. But they do a lot of really good stuff. And I'm inferring that they have the license for like the more kids-based Star Wars comics or something. Yep. Is that what it is? Because Marvel has the grown-up stuff.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. IDW has the younger reader.
Okay. So that's where license, that's what it is. Granted, I was confused when I saw, wait a minute.
Yeah. It's like a subcontract for Marvel.
Okay. That makes sense.
This one they're doing, there's a couple of issues here. It says highlighting Han and Chewie, who are being targeted by Zuckuss and Forlom, which I think is so cool, to be tying in, some of the other bounty hunters that we know. That's just really neat. So it makes me smile. That kind of stuff makes me happy. Let's take a couple of characters that we've only seen a little bit and tie them in with bigger characters. And I'm happy with that.
But the problem I have with this is it feels like it's just such a small universe then.
But it makes sense, though, the bounty hunters would be looking. Okay, you know, there could be thousands of bounty hunters in the universe. The handful that Vader picked up to hunt down Han was either because of proximity. They happen to be in the region.
Or experience.
And if Han is regularly in that region, then they could come across each other. Or Vader did some homework and he picked those up because they have a history with Han. Boba Fett has a history. Maybe Zuckuss and Forlom have a history too. There are ways that you could look at this and say that it does make sense. And again, smugglers and bounty hunters are going to run in the same circles, the criminal underground.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's not like they're meeting up with Zeb from Rebels or something. It'd be like, well, where does that cross over? Or they're not meeting up with, you know, BB-8 was made hundreds of years ago and we just didn't know it. And they're going to come across BB-8 or something. Like, right. It kind of makes sense here.
Yeah. I'm okay with it. And, you know, it's obviously not a major storyline, being in an IDW book and no shade to IDW for it, but,
it's a tangential thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
this last one has me upset, though.
Well, why is that?
No, this last one has me so upset. Happy.
Choose Your Destiny, a Han and Chewie adventure by Kevin Scott. This is a choose your own adventure book. Because where were the Star Wars choose your own adventure books when I was a kid?
You didn't read
those? Read almost every single freaking choose your own adventure book. I did not see a Han Solo or a Chewbacca in a single one of them. I want my money back. I want my childhood back.
I grew up reading choose your own adventure books. I wore them out. I absolutely love them. And it was great because you could read one book 100 times. I absolutely love them. And this makes me happy. And I will probably buy this, even though it's going to be a kid's book, because I'm going to.
You have to. It's going to be fun. I mean, like you guys said, it's the kind of thing when you're a kid, you wore the pages out because it was just so many choices to do. And
I'm going to get the audiobook version.
Not only am I going to buy it and I'm going to read it, I'm then going to troll Pablo on Twitter and ask him what algorithm is the canonical story.
On this page, it says he does enter the room and get shot. But on this other page, it says he goes down the hallway and he doesn't get shot.
Exactly.
So how is, if this is canon, way, yeah. how is both happening? Is this a quantum physics exercise or something,
that's
Pablo?
Right. Damon, I demand to know.
Yeah, he'll have an answer. He'll have an answer for you.
He's going to love us.
Folks, don't do that. Don't do that to Pablo.
So let's move on to some Toy Fair news.
This also has me really excited.
Yeah,
I know, right?
I smile at the toy stuff all. No.
The International Toy Fair, if folks don't know, was held at the Javits Center in New York City this weekend. And if you were on Twitter or on Instagram and you follow the certain accounts that particularly that Lou and I do, because of our interest in collecting and the Black Series stuff and Lego and that kind of thing, our timelines were just filled with this stuff, and it was awesome.
Yeah. And the trouble with it is you follow so many different people that they all have the same pictures, and you're like, I've seen it before. Show me something new.
Yeah.
I want something new.
Yeah.
So they had some Black Series stuff released. They had both 6-inch and 3¾ figures released.
Mm-hmm.
And there was so much stuff out there. Some of this was released before Toy Fair, I think, as well. Because there was a line of stuff from like the next wave, and then there's a line of stuff that's just being shown now with his new facial technology as far as making better, more realistic faces.
Yeah, better sculpts on the faces, which is like, it's a huge deal. And
oh, yeah.
Some of them, it's to be honest, why there have been so many Black Series characters that I, particularly in the 6-inch, that I did not buy. If it was a character that didn't have a helmet or a mask, because I hated the facial sculpts.
Hated on the Black Series?
Yeah.
A lot of them were bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Even on the Black Series. So, I mean, weird noses and eyes and that kind of stuff. Things that
And that's where when you find them in the store, you got to look at them, because some of them are better than others.
Yes.
Well, yeah. Some of them, it's a manufacturing issue. Right. And others, it's a design issue. I can't think. Of course, I'm really selective about the Black Series characters I get, though, and I get them based on the characters. But I haven't really seen a design problem, at least with any of the ones I've picked up. Yeah, you've always got to look for a little, like the plastic didn't melt the right way, or the paint got in the wrong spot or something.
The eyes up in his forehead or something. You know, you see those.
Right, but if you compare it to a lot of the other options that we get, again, I can't. I was so excited on Force Friday when I grabbed the Sabine 3¾-inch figure off of the rack and then looked at it. And I'm like,
yeah,
did they like take Ezra and put him in Sabine's costume? Like, what is going on with this? Does not look anything like Sabine. And I put it back on the shelf. I was upset. And now I've got the Black Series 6-inch and I'm happy, but this so far has been the best we've been able to get.
But these are incredible. And if you look at the picture, among the slate that we had here is Tobias Beckett. So they have in here some characters from the Solo film. And Tobias Beckett
This is Woody Harrelson's character.
Right, the one that's played by Woody. That sculpt is one of the most incredible sculpts I've ever seen on an action figure ever in the history of freaking anything.
Yeah, this looks amazing. Yep. And, you know, the soft goods are getting better. The people that were there and saw them and touched them, they say they look and feel better than ever.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the cloaks and the jackets have always been kind of a sticking point. Yeah. Now they're
goofy.
They're
looking.
Hard plastic. They don't really look right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, right. I mean, this character looks awesome.
Yeah. We also have the Mimbin Stormtrooper. And, this is, I mean, looking at it, it's kind of funny because it's not a whole lot to look at. It's a traditional Stormtrooper with a black cape. So it gives you this little bit of reminiscence of Phasma, but with a black cape instead of red. And the whole thing is just filthy. It's just.
This guy has been through the ringer.
Oh, yeah. Just like charcoal filthy, just, you know, all over the armor. Definitely not.
So it's Pigpen as a Stormtrooper.
Yeah, right. But
yeah,
the thing
much.
I don't get is, I mean, the upper body and helmet are like a black kind of charcoal-y dirt. And the legs are like a brown kind of, you know, ground dirt. I'm like,
all right, I'm going to have to look at these. I did not actually look at all of these.
It just looks bizarre to me. I mean, he looks awesome, but the coloring looks off.
Yeah.
Personally.
And so this is, and it's funny because I own this book and I've never read it, and I really do have to go read it. The history of the Mimban Stormtrooper, because this planet was the setting for Splinter of the Mind's Eye, which was the first EU book ever written. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I think we're actually like, this is right around the anniversary of when it was published. So, you know, that's kind of a neat throwback thing that they did that. And they have it both in the 6-inch Black Series as well as the 3¾ vintage action figure as well. So,
okay. So then we get a Hoth Leia,
which is my favorite uniform of everything that Leia wears. In every movie she's ever been in. I mean, it does kind of reflect a bit on the fact that Empire is still my favorite Star Wars film, but I liked her uniform from Hoth. I think it was the best thing she wore in all the films.
Well, okay. And you're talking about sculpts for the faces. Mm-hmm. This is easily the best Leia sculpt I've seen.
Yep, it looks great.
I will tell you that the sculpt from the slave Leia in the 6-inch was abysmal. Absolutely abysmal. Yeah. It was a horrible, and I'm not even reflecting anything on the issue of what she was or was not wearing. The facial sculpt of her and the hair was horrible.
I agree.
Just not good at all.
Yep. See, we have Holdo with a blaster, her signature purple gown and purple hair. And again, the face looks really good on this one.
Yeah. And it's a pretty striking figure. It's it looks like Laura Dern's character from the film.
It does. It does.
Very striking.
Let's see. Gamorrean guard with an articulating jaw. This will be a Target exclusive.
I don't know why it has to have an articulating jaw.
I was going to ask the question myself, but it doesn't look like it has much.
Well, how are you going to understand what it says if its jaw doesn't articulate? If you think back to Return of the Jedi and you listen to what they were saying,
he doesn't have to speak. He's got that big axe thing. So,
yeah, it's. I think it's overall it's a cool looking figure because you do get a mix of media and fabrics and that kind of stuff because of. You know what, like they're wearing some hides and they're wearing, you know, other armor. Regular woven clothing and they're wearing armor. So you have a really kind of a neat figure that comes out of that. The articulating jaw seems to be a thing that I've just seen referenced so many times with it, which I guess kind of makes it unique. It is going to be a Target exclusive. Mm-hmm. So my thought here, we have this one as a Target exclusive. The next one up on the list is Zuckuss, which is going to be a Toys R Us exclusive if you still have one that's open near you.
Yeah, if they're still around,
And so this makes me think, I'm hoping they're not going to save these until a Force Friday type of thing in September.
I hope not. It's a long way off.
I'm really hoping they don't. But usually that's when those exclusives are released, either that or around the release of discs of a movie, which is what they did with Rogue One, where they had certain things that were like Target had an exclusive with the release date of the Rogue One disc and that. So who knows?
True. Well, I just picked up the Rey centerpiece that I don't know when it was released, but that was a Toys R Us exclusive.
I just picked that up, too.
Yeah, and it was, I had never seen it before. Oh, I'll grab that. And it was 10% off because they were going out of business. So I was happy with that too. But I don't know when that was released.
And I had never seen it before I went into a store that was closing. And
And so many of these action figures don't show up forever. And all of a sudden you see a boatload of them. I'm like, oh, you know, and it's like you can't.
Or they don't show up forever, and then you have Lou say, I got those 6 months ago. And you're like, no, they haven't come out yet. They came and gone.
Yeah.
Well, no, I still look at my list, and you said you had a 6-inch Sabine Wren. I'm like, I don't have one of those yet.
I got one now.
It's so frustrating how they release this stuff. And you go in the Toys R Us, it's going out of business, and there's still a boatload of
Zuvios,
and then they have a boatload of what was it? The hover tank pilot was their exclusive, or
no,
the snow trooper, I think, wasn't it?
Whatever it was. Toys R Us was the hover tank pilot, and Target was the, not the AT-AT. What was the version in Rogue One? The AT.
Oh,
I forget what the acronym was.
Yeah, the AT-ACT. That was Target's version that came out with the release of the Rogue One disc.
Okay. But yeah, I mean, it's no rhyme or reason to how you see these things showing up. But yeah. Moving along, we have Commander Wolf.
But just a quick mention here on Zuckuss. I'm really happy about that. I like that we're getting a couple of aliens in this between the Gamorrean and Zuckuss. That makes me happy. It just, you know, adds some variety that we're just not getting, you know, human or humanoid figurines.
I just want the bounty hunters. And I think there have been some release that I never picked up. I think they've already done. Haven't they already done Bosk?
Yes,
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've already missed that one. But yep. Yeah, I'll pick up Zuckuss. It's another pretty good sculpt. Yeah. Wolf looks really good, though.
Something about his armor looks
off.
I don't know. Yeah. Too plasticky. It looks too plasticky to me.
Yeah. There is something when I saw the image of it, I'm like, OK, but it looks a little weird. I'm not sure what it is.
See, to me, it's the fact that the chest plate is designed differently from what we're used to seeing with Stormtroopers, and it doesn't break in enough places. And to me, that gives kind of an appearance of it looking plasticky because it's all one piece.
Maybe.
That could be it.
And a lot of the other Stormtrooper armor, you see different, not articulation, but you see different joint breaks.
Yeah.
In different parts of the torso.
But I do like the paint scheme on him. It, you know, it works really well.
Yeah, I like the paint scheme.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be a cool figure to have. Getting a droid 3-pack.
Yep. Which we had in the, I don't think the last wave, but two or three waves ago, we had a droid 3-pack there. They're coming out with another one here. This is R2 and a couple of other droids.
R5-D4.
Yeah, R5-D4 is in it. And the third droid, I don't know what that is.
Looks like Whistler. Whistler is Corin Horn's droid.
Oh, green. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Green R2 astromech.
I don't think
that's what it is, but I mean, it would fit the description.
Yeah.
I've never liked R5-D4. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I mean, he's very old school looking, you know, with the buckety kind of head and the
big squared off. Yeah.
Yeah. And the protruding eyes, you know, optics on it. Yeah.
And so he's not very motivated.
The next one we have up here is one of the centerpiece pieces. So it's the character with a little bit of ground from the stand on and, you know, make a diorama out of it.
Yep.
Kylo Ren freezing the blaster bolt in midair.
Yeah. From
this looks pretty cool.
From The Force Awakens.
From The Force Awakens,
pro shot at him. And that was, I mean, to me, that's one of the best scenes in that entire movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember seeing that for the first time in the theater, and it was like, oh, whoa, holy crap, did he just do that?
You can do that? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then having it just sit there, you almost forgot about it. And then when the scene ends, the blaster bolt finishes its travel and hits. It's like, oh, I forgot that was still a thing.
Yeah.
Right.
So this one looks pretty cool. I've got a couple of these centerpiece things already, and I'm not sure why, but you know, they are cool. They're very cool to have, and I like them, but I'm not sure what I'm going to do with them yet because I like to photograph my stuff, and I'm not sure I can do that and not get surrounding imagery and have it work well. I gotta play with that.
See, they used to have a series called, I think it was actually called Unleashed.
Mm-hmm.
And they had things that were kind of similar to this. And I loved those. Those were my favorite collectibles of all time. And they retailed for like $15 or $20. They weren't collectible from a monetary point of view. But the sculpts were phenomenal and they looked great. And then they stopped making them. And there are several that I still haven't gotten. So I was excited when these came out, but the only one that I've liked well enough to pick up so far is the one that you were just talking about, Lou, with Rey.
Yeah.
And the others are okay. Yep. You know, the Luke Skywalker one on Hoth is good, but
my favorite is the Vader one coming through the doorway on the Tantive IV.
Yeah. That one's good too.
That's because it's just like so iconic of the beginning of all of Star Wars for us. And it's intimidating. There's a lot there.
The other one looks pretty good with the older Luke, I don't know what the setting is of it, but it's a good looking sculpt of him in some ground. Mm-hmm. That one just came out recently too. But it, you know, also they talked about some 3¾ inch stuff being released, and I'm kind of bummed that we're not getting these in 6 inch.
Yeah. Like Aphra? I mean,
yeah, that's a big one. I'm not surprised by her because she's not really prominent, Julie, in the comics, but
well, it would have been something like to have her.
Cool. The one I'm more bummed about is that Range Trooper. Yeah. So the pictures of him with those weird looking boots that are kind of powered, whatever they are.
Yeah.
I think that'd be an awesome character in 6 inch.
I don't know what this character is. I'm assuming it comes from Solo. It looks so freaking cool. I cannot wait to see this thing on a screen. And I'm pretty bummed that this isn't coming in a 6 inch because this looks really, really neat.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be nice to have a Solo film version of Han.
Snowy mountain range in the teaser, so yeah. Range Trooper, and he looks kind of like a buffed up snow trooper.
Yeah,
he does. Yep.
I am bummed that Aphra is not in 6 inch. I will be seeking her out in the 3¾, and I only have like a couple of 3¾ that I've bought, and I keep them carded. But Aphra, I will definitely be seeking out. I like her character. I'm not current with her comic, but I read a number of the early stuff with her, and I really, really like the character. I think she's an awesome character. So, and I'd love to see her come onto the screen somewhere, small screen or big screen. Cool. I'd love to see that character come in. She has a lot of depth, and she's really interesting because she's one of those characters that kind of hangs out in the fringe a little bit, and she has this,
but she's very intriguing. You know, it's one of these things where she's connected to the stuff that we all know and love and see.
Yeah.
And getting that kind of tangential character, I think, is awesome.
Yeah. And she has this moral ambiguity, which just makes her really interesting. And she's always in trouble with somebody. just a really cool character. So, we get a young Han here from the Solo film. As I mentioned earlier, we have this Mimbin Stormtrooper also in 3¾. We get a Snoke for some reason. I don't know why. And we have a Rey and Luke from The Last Jedi, particularly their island clothes. So,
yeah. And the one we did forget to mention, and I truly did forget to mention, was the Porg 2-pack in Black Series
6-inch. And talk about a nice sculpt. I mean, those look like Porgs. They look
real. Nothing nice about them.
Sure there is. They're Porgs. They're awesome.
There's Porg excrement all over the place.
Not in the Black Series. I looked.
But it's all over the Falcon.
See, what I would appreciate is if
you probably can't walk in the Falcon.
Can we talk about the Falcon toy for a second?
No, not yet. Because you know what, Eric? We're not there yet. Wanted to have us talk about Porgs. So we're going to talk about Porgs. I'm wishing that they did a Black Series centerpiece with
Tim still hasn't figured out reverse psychology yet.
Chewie with the Porg in his hand.
With a couple of the like really doughy eyed Porgs standing there watching him, you know, chaw away at a Porg leg. And a little campfire out front. That's what I want.
And and they could partner with like Yankee Candle and they could make a candle that smells like roast Porg. So when you burn it, it would have a little scent to it. Oh, that'd be awesome.
It smells like chicken.
That's fantastic.
You guys have seen Robot Chicken, right? They take the toys and they'll take little bits of clay and kind of use that to alter the facial animations and stuff. So just take a little tiny bit of clay and a little X-Acto knife and just kind of carve those big doughy eyes onto the poor guys.
Oh.
Put a couple little teardrops in the middle.
We need that.
Yeah.
That is something I need in my life.
Oh, so Tim, near and dear to your heart is the last thing on our list here. So why don't you take this one?
The Porgs.
Well, and this is actually kind of an amalgamation of things for both me and for Eric. Even though Eric isn't really a big Lego collector, this kind of helps explain some of the things that we've been talking about and that Eric has had a lot of concern with.
Okay, so hold on. I want to point out that one of the new features of our podcast is you can now skip chapters. So when we give a spoiler warning,
like now,
you can skip ahead to the next discussion topic if your podcast player supports it. And I want to point that out because in this picture on the site, it does not demonstrate one of the things we're going to talk about. And I imagine now that I know what the real story is on it, that that moment in the film might be interesting.
Yes, because I know.
So we should give a little bit of a spoiler warning.
Yeah. So spoiler warning here. So Lego has come out with yet another Millennium Falcon because they needed to have a 17th one, I guess.
Exactly.
Specifically, this one is called, and this is where Eric and I are going in our line of reasoning. This one is called the Kessel Run Millennium Falcon. And so we've been speculating for quite a while since we saw some early imagery of the Falcon that it seems to have this longer nose on it. And we don't see that gap that we're used to seeing up front with the Falcon that we just know traditionally.
Right. The little tuning fork type thing sticking out.
So when you look at the pictures of this Falcon, this Lego Falcon, there is a it has all the great features of the canopy and the whole thing opens up and you see, you know, the Jarek board and all, you know, kind of all the typical things that you would expect to see in the Falcon that you've seen in all these other sets. It also has in it a cargo pod. And that cargo pod accounts for the additional front length of the Falcon. And it also takes up that space that between what we know to be the mandibles and where that front main ramp is of the Falcon that we're familiar with from all the other Star Wars movies. So this cargo pod comes out. And lo and behold, when you kind of go continue through the pictures in this, you do see that once that cargo pod comes out, it looks like the Falcon that we're used to. So what we're presuming here, and everyone who I'm looking at on a screen needs to nod their head as I say this, what we're presuming here is this kind of goes to the story of Han carrying cargo for Jabba, making a run. Which he's then ends up getting pursued by Imperials. He has to dump his cargo, and this is the cargo that he dumps, and he never replaces the cargo pod that goes into slot A.
But, you know,
I hate to, well, actually, you
can.
Actually,
that's fine.
It's kind of fun.
You love doing it.
There is, was it from the force.net? There was another story that talks about it not so much being a cargo pod as a mini ship.
I saw that earlier.
More kind of like the Phantom is to the Ghost.
I saw that earlier. But when you look at the pictures of this Lego, it is not a ship. It is not a little.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, but I saw another photo somewhere else where it looked like it may have been, and it might have been from the 3¼-inch toy. And it looked a little more like it could maybe be a ship of sort.
I really want to think it's a cargo pod, not a ship.
Yeah.
Cause if it's a ship, it's a really tiny ship. It's like a coffin. It's like a coffin shaped ship.
if you look at so when we look at the toys and a lot of this information, as Tim pointed out, it's coming from the toys. Initially it came from the Lego stuff. The Hasbro stuff has since had some similar sorts of things. But you got to keep in mind that that stuff isn't always to scale. The drawing I saw made that looked more to scale looked like it could actually be something that, you know, the size of one of the, what are the little runabouts from Stargate Atlantis or, Star Trek Next Generation.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's just kind of like a little shuttle sort of thing. And I'm not saying it is, it may be a cargo pod. I don't know. And that's fine. I've seen fewer indications that it is a mini ship. But
this is the shuttle that Inara uses before she went to the Firefly universe.
Probably.
Could be.
So,
don't bring a black light in there. That's all I'm saying.
Either way, the point is, regardless of what the purpose of this thing is, I'm going to cut that. The point is, whatever the purpose of this thing is, it is something that seems to be intentionally detachable, which also goes back to the point of there being other YT-1300 freighters going all the way back to the prequels. It's kind of Easter eggs that were in the background. But if it's something that's made to be detachable, then it would make sense that we would have seen YT-1300s in the prequels that didn't have that in there. Right. So like my whole complaint about all of this has now been, I'm much more comfortable with this whole situation with the Falcon, the panels and stuff. The explanation I've heard of it is absolutely ludicrous and stupid to me, but I don't care about it.
I don't either.
Aesthetic doesn't bother me. The nose aesthetic bothered me, but now it makes perfect sense and I'm okay with it.
So if folks want to see the pictures, head over to it's brothersbrick.com, and there's a hyphen between brothers and brick. And or you can just do a search for Kessel Run Millennium Falcon. Or Lego Kessel Run Millennium Falcon, and these pictures will come up. I have, while Eric was talking, I did take a quick look, and Nerdist they have some pictures of, this is not Lego, this is just a playset. Actually, you have the Lego ones too, but this is just like an action figure playset, small action figure playset. And it's interesting because the imagery looks, it's obviously not Lego, but the design looks exactly like the Lego one. It does not look like a ship. However, the description that they have, the caption that they have under the picture, says that the nose of this toy appears to have weapons that swing out from the front, and the nose clearly pulls out into a separate, smaller ship.
Right.
It doesn't look like a ship.
Yeah, I did see weapons on the thing I saw earlier too. Mm. Why would you put weapons on a cargo pod?
And that's a good point. Although the picture here does not look like a ship of any sort. So
I'll give you that.
Yeah. So we'll see what it actually ends up being. I agree with Lou. I like the idea of a cargo pod better. The only alternative is if maybe the space is intended to be designed for a cargo pod, but they built in something that could be a ship that is either remotely controlled or can fit in one pilot that's used for smuggling, you know, something can like get in under the radar without being sensed, get some goods and then bring them back to the ship kind of thing. I'm just kind of throwing something out there. That's all.
You know, I found another set of photos on space.com, and they got one said, this shuttle-like craft detached from the front of the Lego Kessel Run Millennium Falcon. Could it be an escape pod? And it's got the top opened on it to reveal what looks like a control pad and nothing else but a place to lay down, maybe.
Okay.
And it looks like it's got a round blue thing at the back, like could be an engine. So maybe it is a shuttlecraft or...
could be
some sort of a escape pod or something. So
I thought the Falcon had an escape pod already that was located opposite the main personnel ramp.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's what I always thought too.
This could also be another escape pod.
It says the biggest surprise is the front section, which includes what appears to be an escape pod or shuttle that fills out the gap we used to see in the older versions of the Falcon.
Right.
Perhaps we'll learn in Solo, Star Wars Story, this whole is an extra vehicle, and why later versions of the Falcon don't have it. So,
real quick, I want to give a shout out to somebody in our Discord community. Kyle posted some pictures that he got from the SWCA.com. You guys remember the little mini rig figures they came out with back in like the Empire Strikes Back, I think prior to Return of the Jedi being released? They were just little single figure toys that they came up with because they needed some more vehicles at a low price point. They weren't actually from any of the films. It might have been after Return of the Jedi even, because they had one that kind of looked like the Tidarium shuttle, but like a miniature version.
Okay.
But they called them mini rigs. I've never seen this one before, and I don't know how it would have escaped me after all these years. But they apparently, Kenner had made a mini rig that fit into the front of the Falcon that was exactly that. It was a single manned mini ship. Now it looks different from what we're seeing in the Solo movie, but still it's kind of cool that, you know, 30 years ago, someone had this same idea and made a toy out of it that you could put into the existing Millennium Falcon toy that you already owned. And that's pretty awesome. And speaking of the toy, the 3¾-inch scale, Millennium Falcon toy, it looks like the back does not open up into a play area with like the chest table and the quad, well, there's no quad cannon on this version, right, but like you don't have an interior playset. But, and apparently it's a little bit smaller in scale than the old vintage version of the Millennium Falcon toy. This is $100.
Mm-hmm.
$100 for this? That seems crazy to me.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, you know, no matter what they do, and I actually kind of like that there's a little bit of mystery to the story for us with this, but I think it does satisfy us. I know it certainly does for me a little bit as to why do we see this design difference in the Falcon that from something we're mm-hmm. used to yeah. to something else. So mm-hmm. this right now satisfies my curiosity, but it also makes me more curious to see, okay, exactly what is this and how do they use it? And what's the plot device that kind of drives this? So I'm glad that there's right. still a little bit of mystery there for me.
And I just hope we do get an answer in the movie. I mean, I suspect we will, but there's other things we want to get answers to that we didn't get answers to yet. So
yeah.
if they don't, I'll be really, really, really upset.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've been going about an hour and a half. I think we're done with our news. Tim, I think you have a fun fact for us.
Yeah, just a quick little fun fact. It was something I was reminded of recently that I'd kind of forgotten about, and it's kind of a thing that I'm not sure that a lot of people are aware of, but it is information that's out there. You guys know who Ralph McQuarrie is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, a lot of folks do. If you happen to not be familiar with Ralph McQuarrie, if you've seen any prints or designs or drawings that very oftentimes get kicked around the internet of like early versions of Star Wars where you would see Luke Skywalker squaring off against Darth Vader and Luke would have some kind of, you know, weird breathing apparatus on a helmet or something and, you know, some kind of funky different lightsabers and some other things. And he's also done a lot of like concept art and drawings for different ships and stormtroopers and Darth Vader and different settings like Hoth and that kind of stuff. Bespin, really, really iconic things, beautiful, beautiful art. And a lot of things obviously were very conceptually applied to what came to be in the films. So Ralph McQuarrie, and we kind of spoke a little bit earlier about people getting some cameo or walk-on roles into films. Ralph McQuarrie actually had a very brief cameo, and this was in Empire Strikes Back in Echo Base. So he was actually, I just saw him walking through the hall behind me here a little while ago. So it was actually in Echo Base. You had a couple of characters. It was a brief exchange of a couple of characters in front of there's a backdrop of ships. And you saw Ralph McQuarrie walk behind them. He was in the Rebel Alliance Hoth uniform, you know, with a little bit of extra insulation in the vest and all that. And he was carrying what essentially was his drawing pad under his arm, and he just kind of walked by and that was that. And there was Ralph McQuarrie. So,
nice.
Yeah. Just,
I never knew that.
Yeah. Just kind
that's
of,
cool. I did not know that.
Oh,
either.
You didn't. Oh, okay.
No.
Cool. No. Yeah. So that's Ralph McQuarrie. And it's something you can Google and you'll come up with the image, or even a little bit of video of it and they'll show. And it's a very like half second, very brief thing. But that is indeed Ralph McQuarrie, who did so much beautiful concept art for Star Wars.
Yeah, I mean, he's responsible for so much of the really design is. Of what we know as
right.
Star Wars.
Yeah. Right. If he wasn't around, we'd have a whole different Star Wars than we have today.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's really cool. I had no idea. That's awesome.
Yeah, that is pretty sweet.
Yep. Neat little thing.
Okay, so unless you guys have anything else, we're going to wrap this up and close the blast doors. You guys are both good?
Yeah, I'm.
I mean, I can find filler if we're looking to pad the show.
No, we're already an hour and a half. We don't need to pad the show.
No, all my tauntauns have come in for the night, so you can close up, Lou.
Are you going to shave them now? Because it's getting warm. You said you're going to do that
tomorrow, maybe.
Shave. Going to cuddle up tomorrow. With some okay. porgs.
It's late, and I got to watch Rebels. And no, the porgs can stay outside and freeze for all I care.
Okay, if you guys want to get in touch with us, the best way to do that is via email. You can send us an email to echobase@randomchatter.com. That comes to all three of us, and we'll try to respond to you when we can.
I have a deal worked out with Tyson Chicken, actually.
Ah, there you go. All right, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/randomchatternetwork. That's for the entire Random Chatter Network. The Twitter account for that is Random Chatter. However, this individual podcast just for Echo Base is Echo Base Podcast. You can find all of our Star Wars related stuff there. For now, we might be migrating that over to our new Star Wars sub-network branding, which will be Outer Rim. But for right now, Echo Base Podcast is where you can find us on Twitter. Lou, where can we find you on Twitter?
Oh, you can find me at my name. It's just Lou Secchi, so Lou Secchi.
All right, Tim?
That's I Hate Porgs. No, that's...
I think that's taken.
I should actually check that.
I think I Hate Porgs 2 is also taken.
Oh, damn. Yeah. That's at Qui-Gon Tim, Tim with two M's.
All right, mine is Eric Blythe. That's E-R-R-I-K-B-L-Y-T-H-E. Instagram. I have no idea how it works, but apparently we are there. There's a Random Chatter account, and there's also an Outer Rim Network account. Mm-hmm. This Outer Rim Network thing we're talking about that Lou leaked last episode.
I'm good at that.
Hollywood Reporter actually picked that up, and like they tried to get interviews and everything. Lou and I had to stay adamant about not disclosing anything, and they're tough.
No, we're saving it for you guys for here on the podcast. Yeah. See, we're gonna have more information on that down the road. We're not ready to make a public statement about it yet or anything, but it's coming soon. One other thing that's coming soon that we're ready to make an announcement on, we'll talk about when we get to the Patreon stuff. But don't forget, you can find all of our other shows at randomchatter.com.
We definitely appreciate you helping to spread the word and support us. Part of that is leaving us some good reviews wherever it is that you find your podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever that may be. Click on all the stars, write in, just give it a couple sentences, but throw a little bit of effort into it. I mean, come on, you got to do more than just
you lazy bums.
Yeah. I mean, if you really like us, you'll give it a little bit of effort. I mean, if you want to know what to write, I mean, I'll just ask and I'll like give you some stuff. But
oh my gosh. No, we are not going to do that.
I'm just trying to help people who want to write something, but the words
our
don't
audience
come to
is
mind
smart and capable and articulate, and they don't need our
assistance. They might be drunk. it also helps if you tell your friends about us to friends, coworkers, family, whoever especially pertinent to this show who happens to like Star Wars. We all know other Star Wars fans. We like to hang out with folks who like the things that we do. And talk to them about podcasts. And there are a lot of Star Wars podcasts out there. We're not going to tell you that we do it better than they do. We do. But we do something different. You know, we kind of have our own our own brand of stuff. And Echo Base has been around for quite a while. So if you like us, chances are that they will like us too. So please kind of give us a referral and send them our way. We also appreciate some financial support, which you can do by way of Patreon. You've heard my Patreon pitch before. You head over to randomchatter.com/Patreon, and it will give you all the details in terms of how you create an account, just like you do now for like anything in your life. You can then select what it is that you want to contribute to. And being directed through our website, it kind of directs it right toward Random Chatter. And obviously, Random Chatter is our home network. That's what Echo Base is part of. And so any financial contributions that you give to there, they support all of our shows. And there's a lot of infrastructure that goes into this kinds of thing. We have our website that Eric mentioned. We have data fees, storage fees, that kind of stuff. We have other things that we're also looking to do as we continue to grow the network and provide some different options. But we're not just asking you to like, hey, throw money at us and hope that we're going to do something in the future that you're going to like. We're actually going to give you some kind of immediate benefits. So for every contribution you give us through Patreon, we give something back to you. The minimum donation is $1 a month. You might think maybe that doesn't sound like a lot, but hey, it's kind of part of crowdsourcing. So when we have a whole bunch of people that will throw a dollar a month at us, that $12 a year per person gets magnified and multiplied and exemplified. And I can come up with other words, I'm sure.
That is where most of our support comes from, in fact, is the $1 a month donations. That's very important to us.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it all adds up. And that's the kind of stuff that really helps. So just that $1 a month gets you access to stuff within our Discord community. And in fact, you can even kind of try it out. So if you're kind of one of those people that, I'm not quite sure what this whole Discord thing is. I don't know that I want to commit. And hey, it's a great idea to throw some money at these random chatter and Echo Base guys, but I just don't know what I'm going to get out of it. You can actually go to randomchatter.com/discord. That will get you into our public lobby, which is kind of that's the main hangout space in Discord for all of us, for the hosts, for other fans and contributors. And we kind of have all of our general discussion in there. Now, what it won't get you access to is very specific channels, like a channel that we have on Star Wars and Solo spoilers and show specific, like Echo Base or Random Chatter. Or
to be clear, we have about 6 channels on Star Wars.
Yeah, so that's true.
It's not just one Star Wars.
We have channels on food and pets and alcohol and all sorts of things. And new channels pop up on a pretty regular basis based on whatever it is people want to talk about. So you can commitment free go to randomchatter.com/discord. And that will direct you over to our public lobby, and you can come hang out for a while and see if you like it. And if you do, you can go to randomchatter.com/Patreon, and you can throw us some money. It can be that dollar a month. If you want to go to $5 a month, well, you'll also get the full Discord access that you got with a dollar a month. Plus, you're also going to get some bonus content. And before a lot of our shows, the host kind of hang out and we record some random bonus content. Sometimes it's stuff that you honestly don't care about. We were talking about the weather earlier before this one. It was bad. It was boring. It was dumb.
Were we talking about the weather?
We were talking about the weather. I'm not discouraged. Sometimes we kind of pull the curtain back and we talk about the show and like things we're doing with the show, and maybe not this show, but things we're going to do with a future show. So you get a little bit of insight and you get some little nuggets and you get to hear me exclaim things, usually with foul language, because we don't edit our bonus content. And Eric's going to yell at me really soon for that. But it's how we roll. So that really helps us out, and I've probably gone way too long about this, but we appreciate it. Thank you very much for your contributions. It helps us keep the lights on.
Yes. Yes. That's something that we can't just gloss over. We really do appreciate everybody who donates. And I meant what I said earlier, where I said that most of our donations, most of our support comes from the $1 a month donations. And that's kind of one of the reasons why we wanted to make sure that if you're donating at a dollar a month, that unlocks like 99.9% of Discord for you. And there's, like Tim said, there's a lot of channels in there. So again, a dollar a month, I mean, it's half the price of a large soda at a drive-through. Which probably doesn't mean that much to you. It means a lot to us, though. And I think the Discord community alone, that community is what you're getting, not just the Discord service.
Just to be clear,
and that's a no-brainer.
The dollar a month that you're contributing does not go to Eric getting a drive-through soda.
It does not, because it would only get me half of one.
Yeah.
So just
and a half of a soda is no good to Eric.
Is seasonings and spice rubs for the poor things you're going to start doing.
So moving right along, one of the things we wanted to do when we were kind of reassessing the other Patreon donation levels is that we wanted to find something that for the bonus level subscriber, which we count the $5 donations, and the premium level, which we're counting the $10 donations, we wanted to do something a little bit special. And I mentioned last week that we were going to make an announcement about Random Chatter Theater.
What?
Actual announcement is a little bit late because I had kind of a family emergency come up and I was gone for most of the week. But I'm going to go ahead and make the announcement here because I said by the time you listen to the next episode of Echo Base, you would know what's going on. And I want to keep that commitment to you. So I'm going to tell you what's going on. For the bonus and premium level subscribers, basically, and anything ever we create that's higher than that, we are going to have a movie night. And we are still working out the details of whether it's going to be once a month, twice a month. We're going to make sure that we rotate the timing of it a little bit to make sure that our international audience members will be able to participate. We're on the East Coast. We want to make sure that people on the West Coast can participate. So we're going to have, you know, some adjustments for time zones and stuff that. But basically, without and Carrie.
Thanks, Carrie.
California.
She's got to screw up schedules for everything.
I know, right? Otherwise, we need to move her out to the East Coast. So what it basically is, without getting into all the technicalities right now in the show, because we're already running long, it's going to be a private room in a web browser where we can all go and watch a movie together. There's going to be a chat room. The staff members will be able to chat via audio through the Discord server. The premium level subscribers will also be able to participate via audio. Now, for those in the text chat, we are still going to be interacting directly with the text chat. So it's still going to be a highly interactive environment. And we're going to sit and watch, you know, all kinds of things. Sometimes it'll be like just some goofy bad movie that we can all make fun of together. Other times, I mean, we might watch Rogue One because we all love Star Wars and we want to talk about Star Wars. So that's going to be one of the aspects of Random Chatter Theater. Another one is we plan at the moment to do something akin to a book club sort of thing, but it's going to be an ongoing, like a TV aspect to this. And we're looking at possibilities like watching the Firefly series, maybe watching Clone Wars, and kind of going through episode by episode. Now, for that, because we can do an hour-long TV show in 40 minutes or a half-hour show in 20 minutes, we might be able to do those even more frequently. So, again, we're still working out the details for what the scheduling is going to be. But, you know, it's February 19th right now as we record this. Within the next 9 days, by the end of this month, we will have this live and up and running. We've already done testing of it. We know that we're good to go. We just have to nail down the scheduling. So that is Random Chatter Theater. Again, anybody at the $5 donation level will be able to participate in that. Anybody at the $10 participation level will also get to participate via audio. And that's aside from whatever's already listed on the Patreon page for those donation perk levels. We haven't even updated the Patreon page with this information yet. So if you go there today, you might not see it. I'll have that up in the next day or two. But that's what Random Chatter Theater is. Now you know before anybody else. And I hope that that will give you some incentive to maybe consider those perk levels. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to it. I know Tim and Lou are as well.
Oh, yeah. So exactly, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So the music you hear in this podcast is the Imperial March by Celldweller and the Force theme by Scandroid.
And that's about it. We're closing the blast doors. We will come at you in about a week.
All right.
There's a port kind of in the track where the doors come together. Pay it no
don't
mind.
Don't let them get stuck.
No, just close them.
Don't let them get stuck.
It's all over.
Squish. Not everybody.